We are on 6A, and specifically the discussion of Psak on this issue of relations on Friday night. And we saw already last time Rav's students saying that Rav is lenient and that Shmuel is strict, and the people who lived in Neherda, which was where Shmuel lived, saying that Shmuel was lenient and Rav was strict. We talked about that last time. And then we brought a challenge from the case of the stopper in a barrel, Misuchraya Dinazaisa. And Rav was on the record saying you're not allowed to put a rag stopper into a barrel on Yom Tov, and certainly then Shabbos as well, even though it's Davar Sheino Miskaven, even though you don't intend any malacha by doing so, nonetheless, it is prohibited. And Rashi said the malacha that we are concerned about is sochet. Sochet meaning to squeeze out or wring out liquid from the stopper. And our problem is that if Rav believes that you're not allowed to do this, even though you don't intend the malacha, then he should also prohibit first relations on Friday night, because the malacha is unintentional, but he's saying you're liable for unintended malacha. To which the Gemara answered that that's a different story, because that case is a psik reshe, the case of the stopper. It's guaranteed that the liquid is going to emerge from the stopper, and even those who are lenient regarding unintended malacha, devar she'enu miskaven, they are still strict if it's a psik reshe. Right? And that all should hopefully ring bells. That's the discussion we had last time. I did note a little bit last time, and I'm just going to revisit it now, because I think it's important to be aware of. The discussion in Tosfos on this issue. Tosfos insists that the issue we're talking about cannot be the issue of schita, of ringing out. So if you're looking at the Gemara, what you want is the long Tosfos high, but I'm going to say it outside of the Tosfos. I just wanted to point out the conversation that Tosfos has. He says, schita, the prohibition of wringing something out, is fundamentally about libun, about whitening, washing something, or cleaning something. And therefore, Tosfos says, it only applies if you squeeze water out of something. It doesn't apply if you squeeze wine out of something, because squeezing wine out of a cloth is not going to clean the cloth. So Tosfos argues that it can't be the case of schita, because you're not cleaning the cloth. And he says it also can't be what's called mifarek. Mifarek is when you draw liquid out of a solid by doing something to the surface of the solid to get the liquid out. He says it can't be mifarek either, because in this case the liquid is actually going to be destroyed. The liquid that you squeeze out from the cloth is going to be destroyed, and therefore this is lo nichale. This is not something that you want to have happen, and therefore this is permitted. In other words, even if it's guaranteed that you're going to draw out liquid, it's not something that is considered desirable. It's lo nichale. That's Tosfos's argument. And Tosfos brings two proofs to support this idea. One proof comes from a Gemara in Zvachim. It talks about a case in which somebody donates wine to the Beis HaMikdash as a karban. Wants to donate wine to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara in Zvachim Daf Tzadi Aleph says, we actually pour the wine on the altar, on the Mizbeach. Now, that's not done on Shabbos. Nonetheless, you violate a prohibition, because the Torah says in Parashas Tzav, Eish tamid tukar al ha-Mizbeach lo sichbeh. The fire has to be on the Mizbeach at all times, and it can't be extinguished. Well, when you pour your wine on the Mizbeach, you're going to extinguish some of the fire. So how is it that you're allowed to pour wine on the Mizbeach? And the answer is because you're not trying to put out, you don't want to put out the flame. So even if it's a guaranteed result, if it's not a desirable result, it's still okay. Worth noting, and this is a parenthetical comment for those who are gluttons for punishment, this whole thing is a parenthetical comment. This is a parenthetical comment within a parenthetical comment. But the concept of psik reishay, the idea that you're liable for malacha if it's a guaranteed result, is one that we usually associate with Shabbos. Tosfos is now exporting the concept from the laws of Shabbos to the laws of fire on the Mizbeach, and a completely different application. So it's worth noting that Tosfos is doing something that's a little mechudash, a little bit novel in that regard. The other proof that Tosfos brings to show that if it's not your intent, it's permitted, even if the malacha is guaranteed, is the case of a hadas. If you have a hadas that has berries on it, on Sukkos, if the ratio is such that there are more berries than there are leaves, the hadas is not usable on Sukkos. Anybody ever here get a hadas with berries on it? I've only seen it in Israel. I've never seen it in the hadasim that get exported to North America. But they come with berries, they believe it or not. So the if there are more berries than there are leaves, your hadas is disqualified. Well, the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis says you're allowed to remove berries from the hadas on Yom Tov in order to eat the berries, even though that also makes the hadas usable, if you have another hadas that you could also use instead of this one. Because once again, you're now not intending to make it usable, even though that's a guaranteed result, that by removing the berries you make the hadas usable, nonetheless, it's not your intention. So Tosfos shows, from pouring wine on the Mizbeach and removing berries to eat from the hadas, that even if a malacha is guaranteed, if it's not what you want, it's actually okay. And as I said last time, I'm not going into the discussion between where it's not something you want and where it's just something that's a side effect that you don't care about, but it doesn't bother you either. Lo nichale versus lo ichpasle. I'm not going into that. Yes, Chuck.
How did you know I had a question?
Oh, I thought I heard you. The,
that would be, but I do have a question. I'm like, Chuck, I was just waiting patiently until you were finished. I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought. How relevant is it that each of Tosfos' example, it was to fulfill a mitzvah?
Well, in the Sukkos case, in the Hadas case, it's not. It's just that I want to eat the berries.
Except there is a mitzvah of Simchas Shabbos and the fruits are sweet. And that could be part of the Yom Tov Shabbos mitzvah.
So there is a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, of gladdening your Yom Tov. There's a mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos, of enjoying Shabbos. I'm not so sure that eating the berries off of the Hadas really qualifies. Certainly Simchas Yom Tov we usually associate with like meat and wine, as more traditional models of it. My vegetarian children would appreciate hearing you say that you could fulfill it with the berries, but I'm not so sure the Gemara would agree with you. But it's an interesting point that there is a value to what you are doing, but I don't think it would rise to the level of calling it a mitzvah. Rav Simi, what were you going to ask before I thought you were Chuck?
I assume it has to be eating berries out the hadas, not the other way around. I thought there was a good word from
the church. What's the other way around?
Taking out the leaves and then eating.
Yeah, no. It's plucking the berries. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's correct. Okay. So we're now back in the Gemara on Vav Amud Aleph, and I'm going to share the screen with it. Okay, there we go. And the Gemara has a second challenge to Rav. Again, you're telling me that Rav is lenient? Well, I have a problem with that, with that statement. So, this is a direct statement of Rav. This is not done by extrapolation like in the Stopper case. This is straight. The Gemara asks a question. We are where my arrow is pointing here. Vaha Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. Did Rav Chiya Bar Ashi say, quoting Rav, we're now about 7-8 lines down on the page, Halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. He said, Rav says the law follows Rabbi Yehuda. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda prohibits unintended malacha. Rav agrees with him. V'Rav Chanan Bar Ami Omer Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. And Rav Chanan Bar Ami quoted Shmuel to say the law follows Rabbi Shimon, who was lenient. V'Rav Chia Bar Oven, and Rav Chia Bar Oven taught the same lesson, but Masni La Belo Gavri, he took out the Amoraim, he took out Rav Chia Bar Ashi, and he took out Rav Chanan Bar Ami, and just said straight, Rav Amar Halachik Rabbi Yehuda, Ushmuel Amar Halachik Rabbi Shimon, that Rav follows Rabbi Yehuda, and Shmuel follows Rabbi Shimon, and the point for us is that if you believe that Rav follows Rabbi Yehuda, then he should be strict regarding relations on Friday night. How do I understand that? So the Gemara says, that's okay, because we remember the tree that we already looked at in terms of when you prohibit and when you permit. La'olam Rav k'Rabbi Yehuda svirolei. Rav agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. You're right. Rav says, davar she'enu miskaven, if the malacha is unintended, you are still liable. However, Lahach lishna da'amar dam mifkad pakid, according to the view that says that the blood is stored behind the membrane, and the concern is bona, that you're making an opening, mekalkel hu eitzel ha-pesach. He'll still argue, yes, you're liable for making the opening even if it's not what you intended. However, we view this as destructive, because she's no longer a basula. Lahach lishna damar dam chiburei michbar, and as far as the view that says the blood is absorbed in the membrane and the malacha is some form of wounding, mekalkel b'chaburahu, I'll tell you that it's talking about, the concern is that you're destructive when you create the wound, and Rabbi Yehuda believes that if you create a wound in a destructive way, you're exempt from liability. So the answer to our question is, yes, it's true. Rav followed Rabbi Yehuda to be strict regarding unintended malacha. Nonetheless, he's still going to say that you're okay with having first relations Friday night. You can still be exempt from any liability. Because there are enough avenues that you can take, basically saying, Mekalkel, what you're doing is destructive, and therefore it doesn't matter that I hold you liable for unintended malacha. Since it's destructive, you're not liable. That's the straightforward answer. Clear? We're good?
Just one quick question.
Yeah.
When you say it's destructive, in one sense, it's not because it diminishes the value of the woman, because her value's increased, because it's less about taking away. There's no problem in taking away Simane Basula. The problem is, if it wasn't there in the first place, the fact that he made a chabura, the fact that dam flowed, means her value's increased, or at the very least, maintained.
So, not necessarily. The reason I say not necessarily is because in the event that she were to enter into a future relationship, her dowry would be decreased. So granted that he's not thinking about a future relationship right now, and hopefully she isn't either, nonetheless, it's considered a destructive act in the sense that she was eligible for a higher dowry, and now she's not. I'm using the word dowry loosely, because...
I still have problems with the logic. She gets money through her tuba.
Yes. Right.
So how is she
Do you mean
her ketubah goes from 200 to 100?
Yes. Any future ketubah, not this one.
I think dowry might be throwing us off.
Yeah, the word dowry is not the right word. It's that her future ketubah is going to be decreased in the event that there is one down the line. I mean, Chuck, you seem to be looking at it more holistically.
Right, she's going to end up with more money because she's a basula, and she's not going to be out of pocket.
She's a basula, right? She was a basula a minute ago, and her ketubah from this marriage is the ketubah of a basula. However, in the event that the let me give you the following scenario. She entered into this marriage with Reuven. She was a basula at the start. In the event that something happens to terminate this relationship before they have relations, Reuven owes her the ketubah of a basula. If she marries somebody else, she will be entitled to the ketubah of a basula again. So, for example, if they had got married, it was a nice wedding, everybody danced the night away, and then before they're able to have relations, something happens to Reuven. Reuven dies. His estate is now going to need to pay her the ketubah of a basula. She, after a suitable period of time, meets a nice guy, gets married. She now receives a second ketubah in that relationship, and that's the ketubah of a basula. However, if she had relations with Reuven, then after that Reuven died, in her next relationship, the ketubah is not going to be a basula's ketubah. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda will argue, that, or Rav will argue, that's called mekalkel. You have reduced what she would have gotten for the ketubah from the next relationship. That's the idea. I understand what you're saying, that in terms of the whole view, you're going to argue that if this marriage ends, she's getting other stuff. That's true. But fundamentally, it's about what she will be able to claim in her next relationship. Had they not had relations, she could have claimed ketubah of a basula all over again. That's the idea. Okay. So let's go back to the Gemara, because we're not done asking questions about these different views. So we're now at the third challenge, but now we're going the other way. Our first two challenges were, how can you say that Rav is lenient, Rav is strict? We take a third view, and this is from Rav Chisda, who says, how can anybody be strict? Beis Hillel permits it. Permits relations, the first relations, Friday night. Masi Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda challenged from a Mishnah in Nida. This is the Mishnah at the beginning of the 10th chapter in Meseches Nida. And it's dealing with an issue of presumption. Specifically, the question is this, and this goes back to a question somebody asked actually a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember who asked the question. Today, and we'll see the source for it later, but today, we work with the assumption that all blood that a woman sees is Nida blood. Doesn't make a difference. So if a man and woman have relations on their wedding night, she is considered to be a Nida. And you could tell me forever that it wasn't Dam Nida, that it was just from the membrane, and I won't listen to you. That's not the way that the halacha is paskened. However, if you go back to this Mishnah, they discuss the possibility that we will not assume that this blood is Nida blood. So, Masiv Rechista challenges from this Mishnah. Tinokes Shalohigia Zimano Liros. If there is a girl who is underage, she's not old enough yet to experience Nida, it's just not expected, Vinises, and she gets married. Now, here I actually want to pause, because it's really, really important that we see the sources that I put on the source sheet regarding this point, and I'm going to share my edition of the source sheet here so you can see it for those who did not download it. Gemara in Kiddushin, it's source Aleph on your source sheet. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said, quoting Rav, V'itema Rabbi Elazar, or some said Rabbi Elazar said it, Asur la adam shiakadesh es bito kishehi kitana ad shetigdal v'tomar bifloni ani rotze. You are not allowed to accept kiddushin on behalf of your minor daughter until she reaches adulthood and says, I want to marry so-and-so. It is absolutely not supposed to happen. Now, you may well have heard about the case that happened several years back in which there was a vengeful husband who's in a fight with his wife surrounding the divorce, And he claimed that he had received Kesef Kiddushin from someone on behalf of their minor daughter. And he was not going to divulge what happened, and he was not going to do anything to help them break that Kiddushin unless he got what he wanted in the divorce. So the, there were rabbinic solutions for that problem in order to thwart his plan. But fundamentally, and this comes up in the halachic discussion, he was claiming that he did something prohibited. Because the Gemara says you're not allowed to accept Kiddushin on behalf of a minor. Second point, you might ask, but we know that historically this was done. We know that they did accept Kiddushin on behalf of minors. So here I bring you Tosfos on that Gemara in Kiddushin, its source base, top of the second side of the source sheet, where Tosfos writes, Ketana shemiskadeshes al yedei aviha. If a minor girl is introduced to Kiddushin via her father, we are concerned that maybe if she were an adult, she would have said no, and therefore you shouldn't be accepting this Kiddushin for her. He says, yeah, but we do this. Tosfos writing in the 12th century, 13th century in Western Europe says, yeah, but we do this. That's because each day our exile gets worse and more intense. If a man has the ability to give his daughter a dowry, it could be that he won't have that ability if he waits until she matures. And she will be unable to get married. He's not using aguna the way we use aguna. We use aguna to describe a case in which a woman is halachically married, but stuck without her husband. He's not talking about that. He's saying there's a fear that if you wait until she's an adult, then she isn't going to be able to get married. So therefore, that justifies accepting Kiddushin on her behalf when she is a minor, with the goal that she'll actually get married when she hits adulthood. But Tosfos says, this isn't supposed to happen. And I stress it here because we're about to read in the Gemara about people marrying off minors. So I want you to know, do not try this at home. This is not a lechatchila. This is not the way it's supposed to be done. However, the Gemara deals with the possibility that it happens and what the resulting rules will be.
Sorry, what has happened all the time? Because we have the whole concept of meaning, right? He has, the father marries her off at an early age.
So you're mixing two things. The Mion discussion is actually not the father. Mion is talking about where the father passes away, and now rabbinically, her older brother has the capacity to accept Kesef Kiddushin on her behalf. However, she's able to walk away anytime and say, I am not interested, because his rights are only rabbinic. The Gemara here is talking about a Deoraisic possibility, of the father. But either way, it's not something that we want. It's something that was done, and in particular, in a case where the father passed away, you could envision it being more likely, because of the family's inability to support her, that they would be willing to enter into such a relationship. But this was not a good thing. It was never desirable. It was never something that we wanted. It was something that people felt forced to do.
She may not be able to get married. What is he worried about?
He's worried that they won't have the money to give a dowry, and therefore they won't find a guy who's willing to marry her. You have to remember. Yeah, Tosfos is living in the era. Tosfos is. I talk like there's one, but the authors of the Tosfos are living in the period of the Crusades, and not just in the period of the Crusades, but in the heartland of the Crusades. They're living in Germany and France. Yeah, they're very, very vulnerable, and they feel it. And that's what leads to this activity.
Okay.
All right. Yes, thanks. Chuck.
2 points. First of all, how literally do we take the midrashim regarding the age of Rivka when she married Yitzchak?
So So you could note that Tosfos himself quotes the other view that she is not 3 years old. The Midrashim regarding the age of Rivka when she marries Yitzchak are dealing with a fundamental problem, which is that in the Torah, at the end of Parshas Vayera, we are told about the Akedah, and immediately after that, we are told about the death of Sarah, and we have Midrashim that say that those two events happened at the same time. If you accept that those two events happen at the same time, then Rivka has to be 3 years old at the time that Eliezer, or whoever is working for Avraham, shows up at her house. Because we know that Yitzchak is 40 when he marries Rivka. So, let's do the math. We know Sarah dies when she's 127. Well, let's do it backwards. We know that Sarah is 90 when Yitzchak is born. We know that she's 127 when she dies. So, if her death happens at the time of the Akedah, that means that at that point he is 37. And right after the Akedah, we get news that Rivka has been born. So therefore, must be, when she marries Yitzchak, it's just 3 years later, that means that that she's 3 years old. However, there are numerous ways to thwart that medrash. Right? There are a lot of different things that have to happen in order for that medrash to actually be viewed as glot, so to speak. I'm just looking. Everyone here is frozen. Can you hear me? Oh, dear. Let's try that again. For those listening on the recording, please stand by. Zoom is starting again. Okay, I don't know where you stopped being able to hear me. Oops. I don't know where you stopped being able to hear me, but I'm going to resume what I was saying about the Medrash, at any rate. Yeah, I noticed
you
everybody...
You left out right when you said that at the Keda, Yitzchak was 37, and we know that Rivka was born at that time, so therefore the math is that she's 3 years old when he got married.
Right, so thank you. So the way the Medrash works is this. Sarah is 90 when Yitzchak is born. Sarah is 127 when she dies. The Akedah and the birth of Rivka and Sarah's death are all presented back to back to back in the Chumash. The end of Parashas Vayera, we have the Akedah, then we have the birth of Rivka, Avram finding out that Rivka has been born, and then we have the death of Sarah. So if you assume that all three events happened at roughly the same time, that means Rivka was born when Yitzchak was 37 years old, and we know that he's 40 when he marries her, therefore she must be 3. However, that's a very big assumption. I don't have to assume that the fact that those stories are side by side means that's when the events took place. It's entirely possible that there is a lapse of time between the Akedah and Sarah's death, number one. Number two, the fact that Avram finds out that Rivka's been born after the Akedah does not mean that that's when she was born. It's when Avram found out. And so there are various Mefarshim who say that you don't have to necessarily assume that she is 3 years old at the time of the marriage. And as I noted for you, Tosfos himself brings a medrash that puts her, I think, at the age of 12 at the time of the marriage. So I don't feel beholden to the idea that she's 3.
When we take a look in our eyes today of how everyone on this in the shoe would view a marriage to a 3-year-old, or for that matter, a marriage to a 12-year-old, it's a difficult concept to deal with.
Yes.
And it goes to other concepts we all hold dear, which is the eternity of the values that we learned from the Torah. And I would love to hear you comment on that, especially having completed some reading on attacks on Islam and the behavior of their alleged prophet with young people.
So I have enough issues defending Judaism. I don't really need to get involved with Islam.
No, I don't want you to defend Islam. I take great pleasure in taking a look at it and said, yeah, the guy was a pedophile.
No, but I'm saying to you, I don't need to spend time attacking Islam. I want to defend Judaism. That's what I'm trying to say.
Before I throw stones, I want to make sure I'm not in a glass house.
Yeah, and that's a good idea, Chuck. In terms of the this story and how to take it, even the Midrashim that say that Yitzchak marries her at the age of 3, taking those 3 events as being simultaneous events, and therefore she's actually 3 years old, they're not working with the assumption necessarily that sexual relations happen at that point. That's simply the point when the servant of Abraham gives Kiddushin to her family. She then comes back to live in Canaan, and who knows when relations happen. We know they don't have a kid for another 20 years. So I don't need to make the assumption that something there is happening. Having said that, I don't have any evidence that it's not, beyond general revulsion at the idea of a 3-year-old being put into this situation. The problem that the 3-year-old, you know, Medrash has is not only that you're now forcing 3 events to have occurred simultaneously. It's also that if you're going to tell me that she's 3 years old, you really do need to explain what she's doing, going down to the well, getting water, giving water to the camels. And, by the way, when her family decides to ask her, do you want to go or not, she says, sure, I'm going to go, and it's taken seriously. Those are things we don't normally associate with 3-year-olds. So, like I said, I understand where the Medrash is coming from in reading the series of events that way. But I don't feel beholden to it. Midrashim often, there's a Shita Mekubetzes in Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf, and he's not actually making his own statement. He's quoting this from earlier sources, who talks about Midrashim and the question of when a Medrash is meant to be taken as telling you a literal story as opposed to teaching you ideas. And you come away from that and other classic sources with the understanding that sometimes a Medrash has no interest in telling you a story, but rather is simply trying to explain language in Psukim. And their explanation of the language may lead you into very interesting directions from a story perspective, but the Medrash never intended that. The Medrash is trying to explain the Psukim. And there's more to be said, but that will take us very far afield. I think that's enough on your first point. You had a second point.
No, that was my second point.
Okay, then I'm going to turn back to the Gemara and this girl who's, you know, waiting to get married for you know, reasons of dowry. So we are again at the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph, and what we said was that if this girl, who is not of age yet for menstruation, gets married, Beishamai Omrim Nosnin La Arba'a Lelos. So Beishamai says, we assume that any blood she sees for the first 4 nights after she gets married is all from relations and not Nida blood, because she's not old enough to bleed yet. Ubeis Hillel Omrim Ad Shetichya Hamaka. And Beis Hillel says it's not about 4 nights. It's about when the wound heals. When the wound stops bleeding, then you understand that any future blood is going to be for menstruation. That's Beis Hillel's position. Higias Manoliros Vinises. What if she is of age to menstruate, but she never has done so? And then she gets married. Now what assumptions do I make if she bleeds? So Beishamai Omrim, and this is the part that's relevant for our discussion, Beishamai Omrim Nosnin La Laila Harishon. Beishamai says the first night, we assume any bleeding that she has came from relations. If she bleeds the next night, we assume that that's Nida. Ubeis Hillel Omrim Ad Motzai Shabbos Arba'a Lelos. And Beis Hillel says, we give 4 nights until Motzai Shabbos. We give 4 nights until Motzai Shabbos. End of this Mishnah. Now, the reason why this Mishnah is so interesting to us is that it threw in words that didn't really belong. Let me ask you, this Mishnah from the 10th Perek in Nida is teaching me which halachos? What field of halacha is this Mishnah dealing with?
Nida.
Nida, right. It's teaching me Hilchos Nida. That's what this Mishnah is all about, is the laws of Nida. So the problem here is that it throws in mention of Saturday night. Who asked you to mention Saturday night? Right? Beis Hillel says, for the first 4 nights, we're going to assume that any blood she has is from relations, not from Nida. That's it. That's all you had to say. Why did you throw in mention of Motzai Shabbos? The answer is, it seems to be teaching me a separate halacha, a law of Shabbos. What is the law of Shabbos? It's teaching me, top of daf, vav amud beis, my love, de'ilo ba'al matzi boil. Isn't this saying that, in the event they have not had relations in the first, you know, night, second night, whatever, they are able to have relations the next night, afilu b'Shabbos, even on Shabbos. In other words, the assumption is they got married on Wednesday. The first night was Wednesday night. If nothing happened Wednesday night, they can do Thursday night. So that's night number 2. Then Friday night is night number 3, and Motzai Shabbos is night number 4. So doesn't this show very clearly that Beis Hillel, who was the one who said 4 nights to Motzai Shabbos, believes that first relations can happen on Friday night? And nobody should say that it's not allowed, because everybody's always going to follow Beis Hillel. That's the Gemara's challenge. It says, why should anybody say otherwise? Ella Amarava. So sorry, Amarava. Second line. Rava says, I'll answer you. Lo, levar mi Shabbos. Rava's first answer seems very comical. Tosus explains what Rava meant, but I'm going to just stick with the text that we have here. Rava says, the answer is, it's not talking about having first relations on Friday night. It's all those nights except Friday night. So Abaye says, I can do math. Amar le Abaye, v'ha ad Motzai Shabbos arba alelos katani. You said 4 nights until Motzai Shabbos. So Wednesday night, Thursday night, Motzai Shabbos, that's only 3. Clearly, Friday night's included. Ella Amar Rava, and Rava says, all right, I will answer. What it's saying is this, Kishe Baal. It's talking about where they did have relations Wednesday night. They did have relations Thursday night. And what Beis Hillel is telling me is that I am not going to view the blood as Nida blood for the first 4 nights. So Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Motzai Shabbos, but the Friday night is not initial relations. To which the Gemara asks, Ik Shabbal, my Kamash Malan. I don't understand. If they already had relations before, then what exactly are you teaching me? There is no blood Friday night. Why did you mention Shabbos at all? Kamash Malan, Deshari Lemivol B'Shabbos Kiddishmuel. It's teaching me, and this is the last bit we'll do here, it's teaching me that in this case, where they had first relations Wednesday night, and then Thursday night, they're going to be allowed to have relations Friday night. Da'amar Shmuel, Kishmuel says, Pirtza dechuka muter likanes v'beshabes v'af alpi shemeshir tzroros. Shmuel says that even if they know that the opening is still narrow, and that it's possible there will still be some bleeding, nonetheless, they are still allowed to have relations Friday night. That's not considered to be a violation of Shabbos, but this isn't the case of the having bia for the first time. This isn't the case of having relations for the first time. It's a case where they had it before. And so again, to make sure that this Gemara is clear, because this concludes the third question that they asked. Our challenge was this. How could anybody prohibit initial relations Friday night? Didn't Beis Hillel say that in the event that a woman gets married, we consider, and she's never been a Nida, we consider her blood to be from relations Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Motzai Shabbos, so Friday night can be the first time? So his answer is no. Rava says you could read this as not talking about the first time. The first time was Wednesday night. And what it's teaching me is that they'll be allowed to have relations Friday night in that case, even though it's possible it will still continue to cause bleeding because it's not their first time. But if it were the first time, then in fact it would not be allowed. He says you could read the Gemara that way. You don't have to, but you could. Clear?
No, just what's the difference in terms of the Wednesday night bleeding and the Friday night bleeding?
The Wednesday night one is initial relations. The Friday night is just that there's still some bleeding going on because there's still friction.
And that kind of bleeding is not problematic on terms of
Correct. Correct. The that type of bleeding isn't going to bother anybody because now it's not a guaranteed result at all. It's not a psik reshe. There's no guarantee.
Well, it's not a psik reshe. That's, I think, what I was getting.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a guaranteed result. I will note for you, because I put it on the source sheet, and again, this is a question that someone had asked about a couple of weeks ago. I gave you on the source sheet in source Gimel, the Gemara Nida Samachei Amud Beis, in which we find out that we don't paskin like any of this. Not in terms of initial relations on Shabbos, but in terms of how we view the blood from relations. Rav and Shmuel both said, Halacha bo be'ilas mitzvah uporesh. The law is when a man and a woman get married, they have relations for the first time, and they separate, meaning treat her as a nida at this point. And Rav Chisda challenges it, and he says, but among the Tanaim we learned that they had 4 nights. And the answer, the conclusion of it, which is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, is that nonetheless, Rav and Shmuel paskins like the Brisa, which says, Rabbeinu Chazu v'nimnu bo be'ilas mitzvah uporesh. The psak is they have relations and then they separate, and we don't give the 4 nights. That's not a concept in halacha from the time of Rav and Shmuel going forward. Clear? Okay, the next week, God willing, we will pick up here. I recognize some people may be watching a football game, but there's nothing to do for it because we can't suspend a shear on that basis. If we had the chance to move it to Shabbos afternoon, that would be great. But so it goes. All right.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.